been talking about intuition, like tuning into yourself and how that relates to creativity, is we have to allow that space for that to happen and actually trust it, because we get these intuitive hits all the time. But we're like, oh, that's crazy. Oh, that doesn't make sense. What would so-and-so think? Like, oh, I can't do that. And so we dismiss it.
Right.
But if we were to actually follow through, gosh, the results would be amazing.
Hi, I'm Ebony, and I believe that stories change lives, and everyone has a story worth telling. Sometimes, unfortunately, we let our self-doubt get in the way of us writing our stories and sharing our stories. So that's why I created Motivation to Write as a source of motivation and inspiration to help writers like you and me share our stories with the world. So I talk to the experts ranging from entrepreneurs to marketers to authors to therapists to psychologists who share their knowledge and their advice to help writers like you and me step into our full potential. Hi, welcome to Motivation to Write. Today I have wellness coach Nicole Starbuck, who empowers women to step into their full power and live their best lives. We had an amazing conversation about everything from knowing our values to tapping into our intuition. So let's learn a little bit more about Nicole Starbuck. Nicole Starbuck first discovered her intuitive gifts at the age of 9, but it took hitting rock bottom in her 20s before she finally stepped into her power. After acknowledging and cultivating her spiritual gifts, she felt empowered to ditch her 9-to-5 job after spending more than 15 years in traditional marketing and sales roles. In that process, she learned how to empower women to become successful leaders without sacrificing their self-care or sanity. And today, Nicole shows women all over the world how to tap into their intuitive abilities to create a life they love. So Nicole, you are an intuitive expert, a quantum energy healer, a spiritual mentor, and a life coach who empowers women entrepreneurs to live their best lives. And we were talking before I started recording, this is perfect because I interviewed an entrepreneur named Kuda Biza a few weeks ago, and he said, you know, bloggers, you guys are entrepreneurs too.
Yeah.
I mean, you're starting an adventure. You might not be selling products, but you are selling your blog in a way. You want to get readers. You want all the things that entrepreneurs need. You need to, basically, as a blogger. So tell us how you arrived at this place where you became a life coach.
Yeah, I'll just share with you a little bit of my history, my journey, so you can get to know kind of where I am now and how I got there.
Yeah.
So I was very much of the thinking that if you go to school, get good grades, get a good job, everything will be fine, right? That's the quote unquote American dream. Yeah. And I did that, you know, I did very well in school, like not to toot my own horn, but like I like pursued this traditional track of like, go to school, get good grades, get a good job. And I ended up out of university getting a job as an assistant manager at a major retailer. And it was awful. Like it was not what I wanted to do. It wasn't at all aligned with who I was, what I wanted to do, the mark I wanted to make in the world. But I like resisted it because I was told that this is like success, right? This is what we're supposed to do, is to be successful, to have a good job with good benefits. And I experienced a lot of anxiety and depression, made myself really, really sick, like mentally, physically. And I share that journey in my book, Stress Size, right? How my hunger for control almost killed me.
I forgot to mention that Nicole has
a book. No worries. Yeah, I know. So I have a book and I share that journey of really becoming disillusioned with that American dream. And once I realized that this was not my path, I took a total like 180, right? And turned around and like really looked at what I wanted to do. And I knew that I wanted to help people. And I'm a firm believer that there is purpose in pain, that everything that we go through is to help somebody else through that journey as well. And so even in my darkest moments, even when I was really struggling, like I'm really anxious, I'm really depressed, I'm really upset, I'm really chronically ill, or whatever the case may have been at the time, I knew that there was a reason for that. And I knew that I was being prepared to share that journey with other people. And so once I gained stability, right? So that's survival mode. When you're dealing with issues like that, that's survival mode. But once I gained stability, I was able to look and see, how can I take what I've learned, take what I've experienced, and help other people? And that's how I got into life coaching, is like being able to guide people through this journey of, this is where you are now, this is where you want to be, how can we get you from point A to point B? Right.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I love how you said that there is purpose in pain. I was just recently talking to an author who wrote a book. I mean, she's a writer, but she wrote a book. I can't remember the title, but the genesis of it was the financial crisis of 2008, and how that crisis and her losing her home, and how that just kind of led to this opening of blessings in her life, and how it did serve a purpose, and how there, she talks about a gift in the crisis, or a gift in the pain. Yeah. And it sounds like you kind of had a similar experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell us then, because I'm kind of interested in the intuitive part also, because when you say intuitive expert, does that mean you're a psychic?
Yes. Yes. So okay. I'm always very careful with wording, because, even like, for example, my family doesn't love the term psychic.
Right.
Yeah. So I use the term intuitive a lot so that I can connect with a broader base. But yes, I honestly believe that a lot of these symptoms, right, when we have symptoms, these are warning signs, are actually signs of spiritual awakening. It's our body, our system trying to tell us that we're approaching that next level self. So we have that choice to either pursue that, right? Push forward and move forward and get to that next level self, or shrink back, right? Withdraw, fight or flight, right?
So can you say that one more time? Cause that was kind of, that's big. So when your body is feeling stress or pain, that's a message
that you need to. It's a warning sign.
A warning that you need to move through it.
So it depends on the symptom you're experiencing. So either it's a symptom warning sign that you need to stop doing what you're doing, or you need to start doing what your soul knows it needs to be doing. And sometimes it's both, right? So for me, that was quitting my job and starting a business, right? So when we have anxiety, stress, depression, chronic illness, these are all just warning signs that, hey, you need to stop doing what you're doing, or you need to start doing what you've been put on this earth to do.
And so many people, and myself included, it's when you know, okay, this is what I've experienced. When that's happened, and I know that I need to move on to the next step or realm in my life, if I'm too scared to do that, I'm usually forced into it.
Yes, yes. There have been many a job that I haven't quit that like they end up going bankrupt. I get let go. Like I get really sick and I have to, you know, so the universe has a way of working itself out. And so this connection between anxiety and intuitive gifts or psychic abilities is that I've since learned that all of this anxiety that I was experiencing wasn't just me being in a stressful situation. It was actually my intuition trying to tell me, hey, something's wrong, something's up, but I didn't know how to deal with that. Cause I would see things that would happen. I would know like in my gut that something bad was going to happen, or that this was going to happen. And I felt helpless to change the outcome. So it just made me really, really anxious. Okay. And so since learning that about myself, since shifting that, I'm now able to say, okay, I have this vision of something that's going to happen, right? Yeah. I feel that something's going to happen, but it's out of my hands, right?
Right.
And so I can make my peace with that outcome and release that anxiety. And it's actually giving me a lot of, you know, balance in my life.
So when you just kind of step back and you know it's coming, you don't know what it is or even when it's coming, but if you're able to just kind of step back and allow it into your life instead of maybe trying to force it or over worrying about what's going to happen.
Like think of it like a movie preview. Like if you watched a movie preview and you knew a little bit about the movie that was coming out, you wouldn't freak out about it. You'd just be like, oh, that looks like a cool movie. Or, ooh, that looks scary. Like I'm going to try and not bring that into my life. Right.
Right. Yeah. That's a good analogy. That's a really good analogy. So How then do you, because I think a lot of people, when they think of intuitive experts, they think, oh, well, she can tell me everything. Like, she's going to tell me like when I'm going to die and all that stuff. Is that, that's not necessarily the case.
Not okay. Necessarily. Yeah. What people don't understand is that so much of your life is dependent on your own actions and your own attitude. Okay. So if I were to do a reading on you, say just like a pendulum reading, tarot card reading, or a pure psychic reading, like not using any tools, mm-hmm. that's only as accurate as this moment right now, mm-hmm. based on your current path, your current trajectory. Now, right. I can sometimes see, like, have you ever watched like time travel movies? Like, this happens if you take this action, and this happens mm-hmm. if you take this.
Right.
So yeah. I can sometimes see that, where like, if you were to do this, this is the outcome. And if you were to do this, this is the outcome. But it's all based on you. You mm. have the choice. So you can actually control that outcome to an extent.
Right.
So I could say, Ebony, you know, if you were to write this next book, it would be a bestseller.
Right.
Okay, right. Or if yeah. you were to continue these interviews, you would reach a million people. Right. Mm-hmm. So like, there's some variations with that, but like, if you don't do anything, then obviously you're not going to get that result. Right.
Right. I mean, and that's kind of freeing to know that, because to the thought of everything kind of already being like predestined, predetermined, and this is what's going to happen no matter what. That's a really scary thought. But mm-hmm. when you know that the future is really based on whatever action you choose to take in this moment, that, you know, that makes me feel a little bit more like, okay, I actually have some control here.
Yeah. And I think that's the best, most satisfying form of creation. Yeah. Like, my background is in studio art. So I actually trained in drawing and painting. That's what mm-hmm. like I went to school for, and mm-hmm. I don't necessarily practice that professionally, but what that taught me is that you ultimately can make mm-hmm. whatever you want to make, right. and you can take that same concept and apply that to your life.
Right. Yes. I was just thinking about this.
Right. Actually. Yeah. So manifestation, law of attraction, just very simply, right. you create what you are. You are what you think. So if you think positive, you're going to have positive outcomes. If you think negative, you're going to have negative outcomes.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, when people hear that, Nicole, if you think positive, you have, I mean, I think a lot of people are just so over the positive thinking, because mm-hmm. they think of people like sitting under a tree meditating all day or whatever it is. But it really, I think what it is it's a gradual like mindset change.
It is. Yeah.
And you don't have to sit in a cave by yourself for hours on end. I mean, you have to kind of be in real life to really get the change, right? Because I mean, you could go off to some meditation, and then when you get back into real life, all that might be completely, it's hard to kind of grab that peace that you experienced when you were on the mountain.
Yeah. And there is such a thing as toxic positivity, where you Ooh. Brush feelings under the rug and just only think optimistically, that you're totally ignoring the feelings and where they're coming from. So I'm a believer in feel the feels, right? But don't let the feelings control you. Try and find out where those feelings are coming from, and then honor that. So if you're feeling, I mean, this is so the case with artists and creatives and writers, right? Yeah. We're like, we don't feel like working. We don't feel like writing. We don't feel like making our craft, right?
Right.
Okay, great. So what else could you do to bring fun and joy into your life that mm-hmm. could maybe open up that channel to where maybe mm-hmm. you don't feel like writing today, mm-hmm. but if you were to have fun, say play, dance, go outside, go for a walk, you know, have a really good meal, watch a funny movie, mm-hmm. that tomorrow you would be back on track writing the way that you want to be writing.
Right, right. What do you say to people? I guess maybe you just said it, but for like, let's say writers who are experiencing writer's block, or they're experiencing some type of stress surrounding their work. What are like some practical tips or suggestions you would give them to kind of work their way around the blockage?
Yeah. Sometimes it helps to not do the thing. Right. Mm-hmm. So if you're trying to meet a deadline to write a piece, write an article, submit a chapter, whatever the case may be, and you're so dreading that you're not getting the work done, like, step away and do whatever recharges you. Like, so for some people that's sleep, for some people that's journaling, meditation, walking, whatever, whatever makes your soul feel alive, whatever makes you feel really, really good on the inside. Because the thing that you need to do, that spark of inspiration, that little nugget that's been missing from your work, will come through when you're totally open and relaxed. So the more you stress, the more you clench, the more like closed, look how closed off you are to good things, new things coming in. But if you relax, you open up, well, now all your channels are open to receiving whatever it is you need to receive.
And that image of like the closed fist, it's like trying to hold on to water. Like, you can't hold on to water like this, but if you, you just let it flow. I'm interested, how does quantum energy kind of tie into our, you're a quantum energy healer. I guess first, if you can define that for us and then kind of tell us like how you would use that with a client.
Yeah, so quantum energy is working with not only the cells within the body, but how your mind, body, soul is connected to the energy fields around you. So you, everyone has an energy field around them. Some people call it an aura, right? And some people may also be familiar with the chakra system within the body. But that's all connected to other beings, other entities. So we can then be connected to groups of people or the world at large, or even planetary systems or star systems. So then using that to heal my clients is, as you mentioned earlier, they may be feeling some sort of resistance. So perhaps someone knows that they want to be a business owner. They're building an Etsy shop, but they're like dreading listing their items. Well, they're not going to sell anything if they don't list any items, right? So we dig into, where is that blockage coming from? Is it something from your childhood? Is it something from your shadow self? Is it something within your chakra system? Is it something in your energy field? Is it something ancestrally? Is it something from a past life? So we look at all the things and then we shift that, right? Depending on what they need. They might need some meditation work. They might need some words or light codes or whatever the case may be. And then allow that healing energy to come through, shift that. So it's mindset, body work, energy work, all the things combined so that they can then move forward.
That's really interesting because, yeah, we are connected. We're all connected. Our energy or my energy is going to affect someone else's energy. We're feeding off of each other's energy right now as we're having this conversation. If someone is having some difficulty with their art, with their work, if we go back to the writer who is experiencing whatever challenge they're experiencing with their writing, would a change of environment help, or a change in like who is surrounding them help? Have you ever?
Definitely. I mean, I think everything carries a vibration, carries an energy, even the things around you. Like, if anyone's ever even read or seen Marie Kondo, you know, this idea of items having weight, having energy. And so if you're surrounded by negativity, or if you're surrounded by clutter, or you're surrounded by toxic relationships, that's all going to have an impact in your life and in your work.
I always think that the what is happening within you is manifested outside of you. So like if I go visit someone and, you know, it's just complete like clutter, like
chaos everywhere.
That is a reflection of, there's some type of chaos and clutter happening probably up here in your thinking, or even like congestion. It can come up in illnesses, but it's always just so interesting to kind of observe how the inner affects the outer as a manifestation of the
Sometimes if I'm feeling like stuck, right? And I'm a highly sensitive person. If you've ever heard of HSPs, where like they feel the energy of everything. So if my home feels stagnant, I'll literally like vacuum, dust, do the dishes, light some incense, open the windows. And so like just those little things, even just moving a piece of furniture, right? Or like tidying up, really like clears the air, and then it allows, because we don't realize how much mental space all those things are taking up in our head. So you free that up and you're like, oh, now I can think. Like, oh, now I can write.
Yeah. That's so interesting. It's just the thought that, I mean, this kind of ties into the idea that we are all creators of our reality, because just a simple thing, as you said, switching a piece of furniture or moving it can create a whole new flow of energy. You can create, like, feel like you've created a new space for yourself, and then that can help your artistic creation. It's just so crazy.
Yeah, I'll give you a real life example, like from my personal life. Like, I was talking with my mentor about sharing on social media and how I felt kind of stuck in what I was sharing on my social, and then how that was blocking me from working on my next book. And my husband and I are expecting a baby. We're actually expecting in December. So,
oh my gosh, congratulations.
Thank you. So we were trying to figure out where to put the crib in our room, because we're gonna room in. And we each had different ideas and they were both conflicting. And our roommate comes in and he's like, well, have you thought about totally shifting the way the room is oriented and doing it this way? And we're like, no, we haven't thought about that. That seems weird. But we did it. We totally moved all, I didn't move it. I've supervised.
Right, of course.
we moved all the furniture, and like, man, it felt so good. Like, I felt like we accomplished something. It looked great. We agreed there was much more room, because I didn't know how we were going to fit all this stuff in the room, right? Because we have, you know, a bed and two nightstands and the crib and a desk and a bookshelf and all this stuff. And it looks awesome. And then, like, the very next day, I'm like, I have all kinds of ideas for posts in my book. And like, and it's one of those things where, like, just changing your environment, just shifting your perspective, even like being open to a new idea, like really change things.
Oh, I love that story. Yeah, that's crazy how something that seems unrelated to something is in fact very related.
Right. And it freed me from this guilt, because I'm like entering like the ninth month, like I'm 8.5 months pregnant. So I'm like starting to get into that nesting mode. Right. And baby stuff has seemingly nothing to do with my work or my business or my creativity. But I realized that, like, as I was taking care of these little things, it was freeing up mental space for me to then focus on the things I needed to focus on.
Right. I can remember when this was maybe 10 years ago, my trunk was just packed with stuff, just all kinds of junk. And I was in a place in my life where I needed some clarity, and I can't even remember exactly what the situation was. I knew intuitively that if I cleaned out my trunk, that would help with my clarity. And it in fact did. I cleaned out my trunk. It's just so interesting how things like that happen. Or I was telling another author recently that when I graduated from college, I really needed a job. I had been trying to get a job and I couldn't. And it was just, I intuitively knew that if I called my father, whom I hadn't talked to in a while, that a job opportunity would open. Like, when I first had that thought, I was like, that's ridiculous. What is calling my father have to do with me getting a job? But I did. And I kid you not, like, the next day I was called in for an interview. It's just so crazy how things like that happen.
And that's the thing is, like, I mean, we've been talking about intuition, like tuning into yourself and how that relates to creativity, is we have to allow that space for that to happen and actually trust it, because we get these intuitive hits all the time. Yes. But we're like, oh, that's crazy. Oh, that doesn't make sense. What would so-and-so think? Like, oh, I can't do that. And so we dismiss it.
Right.
But if we were to actually follow through, gosh, the results would be amazing.
How do we get to that place, Nicole? Because I think all of us are intuitive, really, right? But most of us don't, most of us ignore it, as you just said. How can we learn to trust that intuition?
Yeah, I'm going to share with you my favorite self-care tip that has nothing to do with like lighting candles or bubble baths, although I love both of those things.
Okay.
But this will like clear the clutter. Right. Mm-hmm. Because we have way too much going on, especially as women. Right. So we're like, spouse or partner, and we're caretaker, and we're mother and nurturer, and we're like business owner and writer and creator, right, and all the things. And some of us have day jobs, so we're employees too. And and it's just a lot, right? And so we fill our life with all this stuff that not only do we not have time for the things that we want to do, but we actually don't have like the mental clarity and the space to tune into ourselves. So my number one tip for reducing stress and anxiety so that you can really focus on what you need to focus on is to identify your top five core values, your non-negotiables. And people get confused. They think values are priorities, but priorities can change, right? So you may have a priority when you wake up in the morning to check your email. Well, if you have a kid and your kid gets a fever, then you're gonna stop the email and you're gonna go take care of your kid, right? So values never change. Doesn't matter what happens in your life. It's rock solid, never change. Some examples include like your faith, your family, your finances, your health and wellness.
Your time.
Right? Your time. That's one of my values.
That's a big one.
So learning new things, like you may be someone that really aspires to knowledge. And and so I would just encourage anyone that's feeling really stressed or overwhelmed, like, are you actually living life according to your values? And if you don't know what that means, or you're like, heck no, I'm not doing that, you really need to sit down and figure out for yourself, what are the five things that are most important to me that no matter what happens, like, you would be willing to like put your life down for those things.
Wow.
And then you have to take it to the next level. You have to actually live your life through that filter. And mine are actually in a different order, but you would identify your top five.
Yeah.
And then put them in order, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, because that's the hierarchy, right? And then you're literally going to put every single decision, every single opportunity through that filter.
Okay.
And ask yourself, does it add value to at least one of these five? And if it doesn't, that's where you get to feel empowered to say no. You don't have to say no. You could say yes just because it's fun. Like, friend invites you to a birthday party and it doesn't add value to any of those things, but you're like, I want to go because it's fun. Great, do it. But where we get into like guilt and stress and overwhelm is like, well, I feel like I have to because I don't want to disappoint them. But then you're not actually serving your goals. You're so busy serving everyone else, you're not serving your own goals. So this is what really liberated me from a lot of my perfectionism, a lot of my control issues, a lot of my people pleasing, to where I was able to free up so much more of my time that I could take better care of myself. And once I started taking better care of myself, I was a better wife. I was a better friend. I was a better daughter. And I was a better creator too.
Yeah, that's, you know, I think that because if you ask me like right now, what are your five values? I would have to think about it. It's not something that I think a lot of people just kind of know off the bat, and I know I've written them down somewhere. It's good. This is so good because you should always have them kind of in the forefront of your mind, because if something isn't adding any value to, I'm sorry, if something is not, how did you put it?
If it's not adding value to
any of those areas, right? Then you are wasting your time.
A lot of
people get caught up in just doing things that really add no value to their life. That might be where people are very upset and depressed and all kinds of stuff.
Because there's lack of purpose. There's lack of intentionality. Right? There's lack of hope, lack of desire, lack of motivation. But if you know who you are and you know what you believe in, you know what you stand for, and you're actually living that out on a daily basis, well, then it doesn't matter, like, because we get hung up on like performance too. How much did I do today? How much did I cross off my to-do list? How many words did I write or chapters did I complete? But like, if you're adding value to each of these areas every day, like, you're still moving your life forward. It might be intangible, right? So you didn't physically create anything. You didn't like type out 1500 words or whatever, but you've still moved forward. You're a better person today than you were yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Okay? Can we talk a little bit about perfectionism since you mentioned that? Because I think this is a big one.
That's a can of worms for me.
Yeah. I mean, especially for writers who don't, I mean, this is why I feel a lot of people get stuck even started writing something because they feel like I have to write something perfectly the first time. Like for some reason, they're not thinking in terms of drafts. They're thinking in terms of I have to write this. And it has to be good first time. And it's this perfectionism that really stops people from acting on their ideas, on their stories, on starting a business.
Yeah, I mean, you touched on it, this idea of good. Good and perfect are not the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we aspire to perfection as like this like holy grail of like what we're supposed to accomplish. But this idea of good enough, I think is so undervalued and underappreciated. And when you say good enough, like, oh, well, that's good enough. Like you dismiss it and like you act like you didn't really do a good job, right? Mm-hmm. Like somehow you missed the mark, you missed par, right? Mm-hmm. But good enough really is good enough. Like, is this good enough for right now?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because you're only going to be as good as where you are right now. So is this piece good enough for where you are in your life right now? Because you could always write better. Mm-hmm. You could always think bigger. You could always do more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But is it good enough for right now? Can you make your peace with what it's like right now and move on? Right?
Right, right. Why is that so hard for people to grasp? You know what I think it is? I think people are scared of what other people are going to say if other people don't see their work as good enough for now. Do you know?
I think people really pick up on energies, right? So if you believe it's good enough, then it's going to be good enough for the rest of the world. And for those few that it's not, quote, good enough for, well, those aren't your people anyway. If you go into it thinking, well, I don't like this, it's not good enough, well, then no one else is going to think it's great either.
That's a very good point. Yeah. Because you can kind of tell when people have this low self-efficacy or even low self-esteem about themselves, just in the way that they talk about their work or themselves or the way that they carry themselves physically. And so you kind of, if they don't even respect their work, then
why should you?
Right. Yeah. And I was thinking about earlier how there are a lot of people with blogs that are very popular and do very well. And they might not be the best writers.
Oh yeah.
But there's just, I mean, these bloggers have so much confidence and determination and consistency for their and respect for their work that it just kind of attracts all these readers. And meanwhile, you have the writer who, you know, may be educated and is reading this other blogger and like, they can't even write. Why are they getting all this attention? Right. And it has so much more to do with just the perfectionism of the writing. It's the whole energy of the person and how much they're putting into their writing and their feeling about the writing. And
People are really attracted to confidence and they can feel that.
Yes. Yes.
They can feel that in your words and your writing and your images and your pictures and however you're showing up on social or on your blog or website. And like, that's what they want for themselves. They want to feel good about themselves. They want to feel confident. So of course they're going to be wanting to be subscribing to your blog and be on your email list and be reading your work all the time.
Yes. You know what it is? It's people visit blogs, not necessarily to read. I don't think anyone's visiting a blog just to read. People are visiting blogs to experience something.
Yeah. They want a taste of the life that they could have.
Right.
There's a little part of them that knows that they could have it, but they want to see it to believe it, right? Because they lack that self-belief. So if they see someone else living the dream, making money off their blog, writing consistently, having book sales, whatever the case may be, like, they're like, oh yes, there's hope. Because if they can do it, I can do it. If someone with really bad punctuation and terrible grammar can make it as a blogger, then I can do it too.
Right. Yeah. I what you're saying is so true, because I think what bloggers are really selling is this idea of transformation. Because I think people want to be transformed. They want something about themselves to be transformed, whether it is their mindset or their financial situation. They want to undergo some trend. And so I think that really is kind of the underlying message of a lot of blogger sites, even though the blogger might not have tapped into that yet. But that's really the key, yeah, is transformation.
Yeah, they're selling a lifestyle. They're selling an idea.
Yeah. I love how you said it's a lot of how people respond to us or see us depends on how we show up. Mm-hmm. And this idea of showing up, we already said, you know, it has a lot to do with the mindset. How does someone who feels like, let's say we have a lady who's a blogger, and she doesn't feel good about herself as a wife. She doesn't feel good about herself as a mother. Like, everything is just kind of crumbling. How can she show up in such a way to attract clients or readers or whatever?
I think you got to share the struggle, right? Brené Brown talks about vulnerability and this idea of sharing, like, we want to be vulnerable. We want to show up as our true selves. And the true self is messy. Yeah. It's ugly. There's some like deep stuff going on. And you can do that in a way that's very raw and real without like word vomiting over everyone. Mm-hmm. I'm personally a solution seeker. So I like to focus on the solution, identify the problem, and then find a solution and actually implement it. Mm-hmm. So if you're struggling with self-confidence, you're struggling with self-doubt, you're struggling with writer's block, you're struggling with being a quote good enough mother or spouse or whatever the case may be, like, share that, show your readers what you're going through so that you can create this common thread, because they're dealing with the same stuff, right? Mm-hmm. They're just not brave enough to share it yet. So create that bond. And then take it a step further. Okay, you're struggling with this thing, but what are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
And that's the transformation piece. It's really not just going to help you move forward, but help that person on the other end, the receiving end, that's reading your work.
So if we do that, Nicole, so this is what I think a lot of the apprehension comes in here. I want to show some vulnerability and share my story. I'm scared of what my family's going to think if they read my blog. I'm scared of what my friends are going to say if they read that I'm, you know, is there a boundary to be set when you're sharing?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And no, both. Mm-hmm. So first of all, are those people that you've just mentioned that you're worried about pleasing, are they in your top five? Right. Mm-hmm. Are your friends in your top five? Are your social media audience in your top five? Is your mother-in-law in your top five? Mm-hmm. So if they're not, then you kind of have to like let that go. That's a whole process in itself. But now that you know that, yes, it's okay for me to share, it's safe to share, I think you really have to go back to that intuition piece and say, well, how much is too much? Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Especially if the things you're struggling with involve other people. Mm-hmm. For example, if your struggle involves your spouse or partner, right? Mm-hmm. Where do we cross that line from vulnerability to disrespect? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right?
Right.
And so, I mean, if it feels like too much, it's probably too much. So how can you just scale that down a little bit so that you're still sharing your true and authentic self in a way that is respectful towards the other people in the situation and respectful towards the audience that's receiving it?
I was just thinking that vulnerability plays such a huge part in creation, because if you feel like you cannot be vulnerable with people close to you, then you tend to shut down. You don't say anything. Yeah. You just keep everything to yourself, and that can shut down your creativity.
Yeah. I mean, I have family, I have friends that like don't get my work. And I just stop sharing it with them because they don't understand, right? And so I know that it's not personal. It's not like they hate me, right? Mm. It just doesn't resonate with them. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. So I'm going to stop seeking approval of my latest painting from my husband, or stop seeking approval of my latest blog post from my mom, because they're not my target audience anyway.
Yeah.
And they're going to love me no matter what. So it doesn't matter what I create. So just focus on sharing with the people that are meant to hear or see or read whatever it is you're sharing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And know that you're going to get validation from yourself first and then from your loved ones in different ways, not from the work that you're creating. Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people get discouraged when they don't really get the feedback as fast as they want. Right. I was talking to a marketer and she said that most new bloggers abandon their blogs in less than a year because they feel like they're not getting any feedback. They feel like no one's reading. And it takes time to build an audience. It takes time to build trust with the audience. All of that is a process. And I think we're so used to like instant gratification. And so if we put up a blog today and no one's responding to it in a week, we're just like defeated.
Yeah. And I mean, we said at the very beginning, blogging is a business, right? Yeah. What are you selling? You're selling an idea. You're selling a concept. You're selling transformation. You're selling lifestyle. Yeah. And most businesses, I mean, if they don't fail or get abandoned outright, take 2 to 5 years to be profitable. So why would you expect your blog to be any different? And right. You may not even be looking at profit. You may not be looking at monetization, but perhaps you're just looking purely at stats like engagement, readership, right? But why would you expect your work to be any different than a regular business?
Right. Or even if you go to college, I mean, that's like at least 4 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. even trade school is 18 months to 2 years.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So it's just, you got to give it time. And it was, I was talking to someone else and they wrote this book on how people will quit right when they're close to finishing.
10 feet like from goal or 6 feet from goal, something like that.
Yes. Gosh, that's crazy. So how, can you talk a little bit about how you took this, going back to your entrepreneurship, when you realized that your story could help other people, and so you started your coaching. Did you have any fear when you did that? Because I think a lot of people have ideas to do something like what you're doing, but they have all of these, thoughts and, well, this, you might fail, or this, no one's going to show up. But did you encounter any of that?
I did. Yeah, actually, with my husband, who generally is very supportive, but he had this notion of life coaches that you have to have lived life, right, be a certain age to be a life coach. And I totally disagreed because I said it's not about the quantity of your years, mm-hmm. but the depth of your experience. I said, I may only be, and at the time I was in my late 20s, I said, I may only be in my late 20s, but I've gone through something very profound that I think will impact other people. So even though you don't feel the same way, even though you disagree, I'm going to do this thing. And I had to get kind of creative with how I approached it because, and this is just the life coaching example, but it can be the case with any type of business where you have options, right? So you can go to university and then be a coach, right? Yeah. You could go to like a learning program and pay tens of thousands of dollars to be a coach. Or you could, look at other programs and get trained and, spend a reasonable amount of money and get certified and be a coach.
Right.
And I happen to be a certified coach, but you could also not get certified and be a coach because the idea is that you know what you want to do and you're pursuing that and you're helping other people.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
Even though it's like, well, so-and-so doesn't agree with me, but like in your gut, you're supposed to do it. And so you do it afraid. Action cures fear. Right.
Right. And I think action creates clarity too.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of people, you're not even sure. You're not sure what you want to do. And you have these ideas. And so you just have to take action and try something. And then you look at those outcomes and you say, well, I didn't like the outcome here. Maybe instead of calling it a failure, just look at the outcomes and say, I didn't like it. So let me try this. And then you just become more clear on what you want to do once you take action. And then when you do find that thing that you wanted, that you are meant to do, the more action you take, things just get more clear. Like, okay, yeah, now synchronicity, this is happening, this person's walking my life. But a lot of people are just so scared to take that first step and do something. Right?
And they feel like, well, if I do this thing, then I'm stuck in here forever. And that's not true, right? I started my life coaching business 2 years ago, and it's had several permutations since then. Life coaching to spiritual coaching to business coaching to now incorporating all the psychic aspects and the quantum energy healing. And now I'm bringing back the art, and I'm bringing back the writing, and bringing back, or not bringing back because I hadn't started one, but starting a podcast and like all these things. And it's like, I stopped fixating on having to fit in a box, right? Of having to put a label on myself, and just realize I'm just a human. I'm just a person with multiple interests and passions, and I'm just doing the things that feel good at the time. And maybe I'll make art for 6 months. And then after that, I'll do writing for 6 months. And then after that, I go back to business coaching. And the thing is like, it doesn't matter because you have to tune into that intuition and feel that freedom to just go with the flow wherever that flow takes you.
Right. Yeah. Because the demand for things might change anyways.
Yeah. Right?
So there might be a demand running out for more artistic therapy or whatever you want to call it. And then like in a year or two, that might change. And now we need more yoga or whatever it is, but it's good to be flexible as you say.
Yeah.
You know, I think that comes from when we work with young people and we tell them, okay, you're 18. Now you got to pick something. You got to pick one thing that you're going to study. You're going to sweat, blood, tears over for 4 to 5 years. And you got to do that for the rest of your life. And that can mess up a lot of people's
heads. It's the biggest scam in our society today. Yeah. That's a very strong word, but I like believe it with all my heart. This idea that we have to know what we want to do and like commit to it for the rest of our lives.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And I'm huge on following your passions and being intentional, knowing that that's just a framework and that that could change. Right. But it's not like our parents' generation or our grandparents' generation where you could pick a job and stick with that career for 40, 50 years and get retirement and pension and then like, you know, retire and live a good life. Right.
Right.
It's not like that anymore.
Right.
No. And I think people are really, they're really waking up to that. And we can either get anxious and depressed about that. Right. Which a lot of people do, and because they don't know what else to do, or we can look at it as an opportunity to really like discover what it is that lights our soul on fire and then do that.
I remember reading a few years ago in an article in the New York Times about millennials and how most of them have two jobs. They have like a job that they need to survive, and then they have like a side hustle, and that speaks or feeds to their creative side. So they might be, you know, a painter, or they might be a writer. They have some type of painting gig or writing gig, whatever it is. But this idea that it's one thing isn't particularly working for the millennial generation. As I'm glad, because I mean, I majored in music and I am not doing anything with that right now. I mean, things change, right? So,
and I had the same thing where, you know, I went to school for art, right? Drawing and painting, and I could have done it, right? Like I could have pursued that track and been a professional artist and been showing in galleries and museums and all that and be making a living with art. But I had this like come to Jesus moment or something where I looked at my life 5, 10, 15 years down the line. And that's my professors, right? So they are the living example of what my life would have been like. And I asked myself, is that really what I want to be doing?
Yes.
And this was before, you know, I came up with the whole core values thing, but like, is this really the life I want to live? And if they're not living the life I want to live, then why would I follow in their footsteps?
Yes.
And I'm coming to this realization, like my junior year, and in my junior year, I'm like, gosh, I just need to finish. So I finished, but then, you know, once I had my degree, I'm like, okay, what can I do with this? How can I take this experience and not feel like it was a waste of 4 years?
Right.
And ultimately, what you study in university doesn't necessarily mean that's what you're going to do for the rest of your life. You really have to look at it as a way of thinking.
Yes.
So for me, going to school for art was like a creative way of thinking. Mm-hmm. So thinking outside the box. So, you know, those like personality tests where like you have to like answer all these questions. Yeah. It's usually like 100 questions. And then they tell you, you're this type of person. So it's usually like people like graph on the chart. And I'm always the one like way out here. The outlier, like way up there.
Yeah, yeah.
Like way off the chart. And I'm like, this is the art training. See, this is what this prepared me for, is to be the one that left the herd, right?
It's so true. I mean, and all of that artistic education is going to play a major, it's not all for naught. I think is what you were saying earlier. I mean, it's going to play a role. It's not something that you do have to like stick to for your entire life, but it's not a complete waste of time either. Exactly. So that's encouraging. So we are almost out of time, and I cannot believe we're almost out of time.
Oh my gosh. I love our conversation. So good.
So can you, if someone, okay, if we want to empower ourselves as women in our businesses, whatever that is, a blog or a yoga shop, a bakery, whatever. Do you have like maybe one or two practical tips? I think you gave us one or two in the beginning, but just to kind of center ourselves and focus to empower ourselves as women, what's maybe a practice, something practical we can begin to do?
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll do like a two-step process, right? Like really simple. The first step, which I already mentioned, was to eliminate.
Yeah.
Eliminate the clutter, eliminate the negativity, eliminate the toxic relationships. Mm-hmm. Use your core values as a tool for doing that. So you want to get rid of all the junk. Mm-hmm. But you have to fill that space with something positive. Otherwise, more negativity is going to find its way. It's like if you had a field and you pulled up all the weeds, well, you got to put something there. You're just going to get more weeds, right? You're just going to be constantly plucking. Yeah. So get rid of the junk. But then you want to like align with your higher self, right? Mm-hmm. So there is in your future the best possible version of you. Mm. That version of you that has written all the books and made all the money and done all the things that you're scared to do, that version of you exists. So you want to connect with her.
That's so good. Oh my goodness. Oh, I love that. Connect with your higher self.
Your higher self. So your higher self, the best version of yourself, whatever you want to call it, your goddess self, your superstar self, your rock star self. Yeah. Give her a name if you want. And you want to connect with her. You want to visualize her. You want to see all the things that she's seeing, know all the things that she's doing, and put yourself of that feeling of having that now. So she's already written the books and done the things and made the money. Okay, great. So what would that feel like for you to have that right now? Mm. And the more you can like create that flow, that connection, the more you're going to see that happening. Oh, in your life on a daily basis.
That is so good. That's really good. So one of the authors I was telling you about earlier, the one who wrote the book about when you're right at the finish line and you stop. She talks about how we have these multiple personas like within us, like we have, you know, and we just need to, you know, access some of them at particular moments, like even the ones that we don't like, the one that's maybe chattering at you, like you can't do this. She says, don't shut that voice down. Just question it. Like what is going on here? Right. But what you just said about like stepping into your higher self, I mean, there's a part of, as you said, that part of your, there's a persona of you that has that, I don't know, that energy about them because they've already done all the things, and you just kind of need to tap into that and step into that persona. I think of Beyonce, Sasha Fierce persona, right? You know, and I think a lot of people, you know, they get weirded out about like the multiple personas, like, what are you saying? I have multiple personality disorder, whatever. And it's not that, it's that you really do have, we called it a board of directors when we were talking, where you have all these different parts of your personality that are really trying to protect you because they love you. But you got to know who to talk to and when to talk to them and, you know, question them. But I love that idea of just kind of stepping into that powerful energy.
Yeah. And I mean, I know you have a lot of creatives too, listening and reading your work. So, you know, if you're a writer, write about her. What does she look like? What does she sound like? What does she feel like? What is she doing? What's her environment like? How is that different, right? Or if you're an artist, maybe draw her. Right? What does she look like? What is she doing? What does she feel like?
That's really good. Nicole Starbuck, this has been a great conversation. Oh my goodness. This is, thank you so much for joining me. Now tell us where we can find you.
Yeah, so you can find me pretty much anywhere on the web. My website is NicoleStarbuck.com. I am also on Instagram as Nicole.Starbuck. And you can get my book, Stress Size, on Amazon and most major retailers.
But this has been great, wonderful advice and insights, and just loved it. Okay.
I hope you learned something from Nicole, especially I think the most valuable lesson I learned was to know your top five values and then to make sure that everything you do aligns with those top values. That was just the best piece of advice ever because it has made such a difference in the way that I am able to just navigate certain channels in my life now that I know what my five top values are. So I hope that you, if you haven't already done so, that you list your top five values and ask the question every time you have to make a decision, does this feed into my values? Does this align with my values? And that the answer to that question will tell you how to proceed. Tune in next week for another fabulous guest. And in the meantime, visit my website, zazo.com, for my big takeaways from my conversation with Nicole and to sign up for my weekly newsletter. You can follow me on Instagram and Facebook at Motivation to Write. And you can follow me on Twitter at Ebony Haywood. Thank you. And don't forget to visit Nicole's website and read her book. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I will see you next time. Bye-bye.